It's the state of Victorian greyhound racing and the stories behind the sport. This is RSN 927's Off the Leash.
Boy, it's been a big week in greyhound racing. It's time to talk about this wonderful sport now with Molly Haynes. George Ferrugia will be joining us shortly, but Molly joins us now. Good morning or afternoon to you, Molly.
Good afternoon, Gareth. And you're right, I almost feel hungover after what has been an enormous week or a couple of weeks of greyhound racing. But as you know, nothing stops when it comes to the dogs. So push on, we will.
And our first guest, of course, is the manager of the Bendigo Greyhound Racing Association. He does a wonderful job there in Bendigo. And he joins us now, Troy Harley. Good afternoon to you, Troy. Thanks for your company as always.
Good afternoon, Gareth. Good afternoon, Molly.
Now, you've got the ready-to-race auctions not far away now, and obviously it was postponed due to COVID-19. But with these auctions, is there a chance that we could head to Bendigo and find our Melbourne Cup champion?
There's always a chance of that, mate. There's been some pretty handy dogs come out of the auction. Of course, Kiss Me Katoot's a Group 1 winner that came out of the early auctions, but there's been quite a few more than competitive greyhounds come out and plenty of good value greyhounds come out of the auctions over the last couple of years, which is one of the reasons why we're pretty keen or pretty disappointed originally to have to postpone the event in a couple of weeks ago is now that should have been run, and very excited to be able to put it on in March and the possibility of dragging two ready-to-race auctions forward from 2021 onwards.
Troy, for people who may not be aware, can you talk us through what the ready-to-race auctions are and how they kind of work? Because it's not just a simple turn up to the auction day. You get to actually see these greyhounds race on two occasions before you're putting bids in to purchase them.
Yeah, that's correct, Molly. So basically, the heats are on the Monday. This time will be Monday, March 22. They're four-dog heats, graded predominantly by age and experience. And then we run six-dog finals on the Saturday, which is also the morning of the auction. So you get to view the grounds. The races are put up on all the social media and all the websites. So their weights are recorded. All the results are recorded professionally. They're done in the hands of stewards and vets and swabbing procedures, et cetera, as well. So the four-dog heats would run on the Monday. Then the six-dog finals graded mostly on time to put a bit more pressure on those greyhounds to see how they handle more like a race conditions, and they're kind of like they are on race day and pray to the boxes are like they are on race day. So you get four-dog heats on the Monday, six-dog finals on the Saturday, plenty of time to view those Monday heats, and then a couple-hour break after the last of the finals on the Saturday, and we go straight into the auction and sell them on the spot.
Troy, do you reckon this is the future? Because the younger generation enjoy your sport, and it's growing all of the time at the moment. They enjoy to, say, purchase a greyhound and within a month or so that they can see that greyhound racing instead of buying a pup and then waiting 18 months. So do you think that this particular concept will continue to grow with popularity and more trainers, but especially breeders looking to make some money and for a quicker turnover will use these type of options going forward?
Yeah, I think so. I think both sides of the fence certainly win out of this, and it's taken a couple of years. I mean, we've run eight of them now, about to run the ninth in March, but it's taken a few years for the breeder to recognise that there is a market there to sell those greyhounds, and sort of early days of probably 50% were sort of cast-offs. We haven't had that in the last couple of years. There's been good value for both the seller and the buyer, and that's what we're sort of looking for. And as you say, if you can get a group of mates together, I know that a few years back there was a group of mates paid $7,000 for a dog and it won a $10,000 final a fortnight later and got square and run the drink and had a party. And that's what it's about. It's about celebrating with your mates, have a bit of fun with those grounds, particularly after the year we've had and you can't go to the races. We can get back to that in March and April and then flow on and have a bit of fun with those grounds. But I think that the breeders in particular, the ones in the last couple of years that have worked out, it's a very good way to sell those grounds. The pup market hasn't been as viable and feasible as what it has been in previous years, but the ready-to-race market has certainly improved and gone ahead in leaps and bounds. And now we've opened up the interstate grounds as well. It just takes that quality up a little bit as well. I think the buyer will be very excited as what we'll be offering in March.
I also think that people underestimate too how hard it is to actually buy a well-bred pup. And I think to be able to look at this, the auction and the booklet that gets put out, and you get to see some of the high standard of greyhounds that are bred and then purchased through these auctions. It's not just that, but Troy, what about the advantages, I should say, in purchasing a greyhound through the auction? Because you do have feature races that are run throughout the year as well.
Yes, there's two feature races run each year. There's one that's run on Bendigo Cup Night, a $5,000 winner series for the top eight prize money earners after the auction, and then there's the one in Melbourne Cup Carnival as well, where $15,000 winner. And with the auction now in March, we're probably looking at putting on some extra race or two that we had to announce in the new year on our Bendigo Cup Carnival to pretty much be specific for for the owners and buyers of the Rita Race grounds, and not just around extra races as well, but also around some hospitality component of that to experience Bendigo Cup night in the new cafe that's about to be reopened. And the same thing we'll do somewhere in the Christmas meetings for the Easter meetings for the November auctions. So we're sort of working on a few local promotions as well, the local extra races and local incentives to get on board, and just a few bonuses for the owners to experience the race day at Bendigo after they buy a ground from the Bendigo auction.
How much money are we talking about? What do you think the price range will be?
So normally you get your nice average handy dog somewhere around that 7,000 to 10,000. There's been a few buy dogs a little bit cheaper that can go onto it. The top buyers, the top options have been around that 25,000 and 30,000 each year. So if you talk of buying a nice handy dog to race in a couple of weeks for 10,000, you're buying a $5,000 pup at 3 months of age and spending another $5,000 or $6,000 to see if they're ready to race. And that's the advantage of this, is you actually see what is on offer and what the ground is capable of, and work out where you think your return will be straight away. So if you got yourself and nine mates together and took 1,000 each to roll the dice, you'd buy a nice handy pup for 10,000.
Sounds like a plan, Troy.
It's a great plan. I think you might as well stay for the fortnight, mate. Apart from the 2 days of Rita Race, there's 7 days of racing action as well in the Gold Rush Easter Carnival. So 9 days of ground racing activity in 14 days. It's not a bad time to be in Bendigo.
Yeah, we might do RSN Central there. Just park up there. What's that local pub down that highway? I used to go to it every Thursday, Friday night when Mum and Dad were living in Bendigo. It's the big pub. Oh, I forgot. I'll find out. It's at the tip of my tongue and I just can't remember it, would you believe? Troy, look forward to it anyway. And I think what happens there when you've got a sale around a big carnival like yours there, that it gives people that motivation. Like, they see the prize money on offer and people enjoying those big races' success. And then they go, well, we'll also try and buy our greyhound that can win us a big race as well.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. That's part of the reason to tie this one into the Easter Carnival. And, of course, we also, the November one we run every year, which we'll be running again next year as well, we tie that around that festival of racing at the Metropolitan Melbourne. So it's sort of a good incentive for people to come and buy ground.
Good on you, Troy. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Gareth. Thanks, Molly.
There's Troy Harley joining us there. There's a text message coming through, and it mentions, hi, Gareth, did you see the 5.5-year-old win at Hillsville in race number 5? Just looking at the Hillsville results right now, and race number 5 was the previous race there from Hillsville today. In fact, it wasn't. Race number 7 was the previous. Race number 7 is 3 minutes away. Race number 6, Throw Caution, won. But Steve's Ugg Boot, $2.30. A 5.5-year-old, George, you don't usually see that.
No, you don't,
and
mate.
Good afternoon to you too, George, by the way.
Yeah, good afternoon. Yeah, whelped in July 2015, mate. So, he's got a little bit of age on him. He's had 103 starts. He's won 15 of them now 16, and placed in another 40. So he's had a pretty good career, Steve Ugg Boots, and well done to Connections. I think that's probably something that's not utilised enough in ground racing. I think sometimes dogs are retired a little bit early, and I think that's the advantage of having... You know, even Tier 3 racing, for instance, where they don't have to be as good as they were. They could be a couple of lengths off their best, but still run competitively, because we all know greyhounds love to run, and Steve's Ugg Boot certainly is in that category.
So how old would 5.5, so it's basically like a 40-year-old winning, is that right?
Just sort of like you and me going down to the store gift in one of the D-grade competitions.
I tell you what, it's like James Vandermaat winning in straight sets in his local tennis competition.
Oh, that's never going to happen.
No, that's a very good point.
No, but what do they say about 7 years and dog years? So, pushing past 40.
Hey, George, I would back you. I would back you to win down the straight there at Hillsville, a couple of minutes away from our next race. But we'll just quickly touch on the TAB Melbourne Cup and the news there breaking yesterday, Molly, that Hardstyle Rico, on this show, by the way, has officially been retired. Did that surprise you?
It did surprise me a little bit, because I think the dog is still so young, but I completely understand where Lucky is coming from. I did speak to him this morning. He said that he's going to be standing for, I think it was 2,200. So it was great to hear that, you know, he's excited about the breeding prospect. And I know George just wants to dive in when it comes to the lines and the breeding and things like that, especially being out of Bella Infrared, like Lucky touched on yesterday. There's so many Barsha Bales and Fernando Bale females out there at the moment. I just think they're really, really looking for a cross, and that cross can be your Bella Infrared. So I think there's going to be plenty of success for Hardstyle Rico, especially being a track record holder now.
It's Off The Leash. Want to watch every Victorian Greyhound race live and free? Simply download the Watchdog app or follow Watchdog Racing on Twitter or Facebook.
You're with Gareth Hall, Molly Haynes and George Ferrugia on this Tuesday afternoon for Off The Leash. And we're talking about the TAB Melbourne Cup. George, we're having a chat about Hardstyle Rico and the Connections announcing his retirement there yesterday here on RSN Central. Did it surprise you, and how do you think he'll go at Stutt?
Yeah, it surprised me a little bit, but I, again, as I discussed with you, Gareth, I think timing is everything. And to Molly's point, he's out of Bella Infrared, who has got some sires in Australia, Aussie Infrared being one, of course, the dad of Catch the Thief and Playlist. But if you speak to the Americans and you speak to a couple of very good Australian breeders, they'll tell you Bella Infrared, pound for pound, was one of the best greyhounds America has ever seen. His mum, Ballerico, was a handy chaser. I think she won about 13 out of about 30 starts, Gareth. More importantly, her brother, Black Mumbo, was also a Group 1 winner. So people start to look at that stuff. His uncle was a Group 1 winner. He's a Group 1 winner. He's a track record holder in town, which, again, a lot of the breeders will tell you they want to bring in some new blood that's as fast as any dog has ever been. So I think Hardstyle Rico certainly gets an opportunity to be a very, very good stud dog. And as we know, a lot of the females in this time of year, we're coming into summer, will come on into season. So I think that certainly played into his decision. And I think 2200, if that is in fact the price, is certainly very fair.
So, George, for the there's been a lot of text messages over the last day or so regarding Gareth. How much can a stud dog make? So you're the breeder here on Off The Leash. So he's a son of Bella Infrared that has different bloodlines to some of the better sires going around in Australasian greyhound racing. And he just broke the track record in 28.91. That's what he went in the TAB Melbourne Cup to defeat the best ever field, many say, in the great race. So how much will his straws cost and how many bitches will go to him?
Well, so Molly alluded to the fact that I think Lucky was going to put him at $2,200. Now,
okay, yep.
You're allowed to serve as a maximum, Gareth, 208 a year. So 54 a quarter. So if he is fully booked out, that's almost $500,000 in prize money. So essentially he could win another Melbourne Cup,
yep,
by being at stud for a year if he's popular. Now, that you're always rolling the dice that you're going to get full books. So, I mean, that's no guarantee, even for a dog of quality as Hardstyle Rico. But in saying that, if he gets 100, you're still getting over $200,000, which goes into Lucky's pocket, and he deserves it. I mean, he's made the call to retire at stud. And then the waiting game happens, where breeders tend to wait a little bit just to see if the dog's going to make it at stud before then there's another wave of females going to him. So, yeah, look, it's exciting, and no doubt Lucky would be loving in 2 or 3 years' time sitting back seeing Hardstyle Rico's progeny hit the racetrack. So, yeah, it's certainly he can certainly make a lot of money from it, that's for sure, especially if he's well-received from breeders.
Do we know what David Gleeson's doing with Shimmer Shine?
Spoke to David Gleeson this morning. Shimmer Shine pulled up very rough from the Melbourne Cup, which is no surprise. I mean, if you look back at the replay, almost fell on his nose. It was, yep, surprising he actually kept his feet. So very, very doubtful that he'll be in the Ballarat Cup, and that probably also means the Hobart 1000. And, yeah, any decisions made about his stud future will be between Dave and Team Daly, that's for sure. He's obviously still got a lot to give. But, again, like the Hardstyle Rico decision, do you pull the pin now or do you wait and go for races,
you know,
like
Dave,
the Australian Cup?
Yeah. You know David really well, George. What's he thinking? If you're a betting man right now, would you say he's more in the corner of retiring Shimmer Shine than racing on after, obviously, he didn't pull up that great there from that TAB Melbourne Cup on Friday night?
At a guess, and this is without me bothering him to buy a vial, he is getting closer to retirement.
All right, that's why we get George on the show, Molly. It's not an exclusive story, but most likely probably leaning towards Shimmer Shine retiring. So we will give him a ticket take parade here at RSN Central down the corridors. What a wonderful career he's had. And we should get a free straw, George.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'll probably get a call from both dailies saying, what, you're retiring my dogs on radio now?
Yeah.
Yes.
I haven't done that.
We'll be in trouble.
Tom, just so you know. But, yeah, look, obviously he pulled up pretty rough from that, yep, Melbourne Cup. So he's another one. The other interesting one is Simon Tolhallen, guys, who has decided to opt to go to Dapto Megastars in a heat drawing box three on Thursday. So we get to see him run in a couple of days' time. Really interesting to see him take that route instead of, say, perhaps the Ballarat Cup or the Hobart 1000, I suppose. So really interesting to see how he goes at Dapto.
So from that Melbourne Cup field, Molly, we've got Tommy Shelby heading to Tasmania, and we have Simon Solhallen heading to Dapto.
Yes, and I also think we've got Tigalong Tonk heading to Tassie as well.
Okay.
I believe he's been over there before. I reckon he placed in the Hobart 1000 last year,
yeah,
from memory.
Yeah,
so I've got a feeling he's on. I feel like someone's told me, I just can't remember who, that he was heading over to Tassie. So they seem to be kind of spreading everywhere. I was really surprised that Simon told Helen headed Dapto way. But look, I know David Burnett knows exactly what he's doing, and I'm glad that they didn't retire Simon told Helen, though, because I know there are a lot of whispers around after retiring him after that Melbourne Cup. Mm-hmm. If he had of one, we probably would have been talking about his retirement there too. But I just, the Australian Cup is so close, and I really, really want Simon told Helen to do, you know, break that $1 million barrier and you know, pick up that, yep, you know, really, really special group one here in Victoria.
Well, if he wins the Australian Cup, I know Ash Baker, he's a man that thinks outside the square. They should name something after Simon told Helen there at the Meadows. If he breaks the back straight record, like down the Simon told Helen back straight or something like that, George.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we see when Fanna Bale broke the $1 million barrier, we've got the Fanna Bale superstars now going,
yep,
on. Just to Molly's point, I think it was he was in the teens in his race start career. Tigalong Tonk went there and ran the fastest heat for the Hobart 1000 and had no luck in the final. That was probably about the time where he really announced himself to say, oh, this is a really serious greyhound. And as we've said, all those three greyhounds, and you throw in Hardstyle Rico now, have just dominated the greyhound scenery for the last 12 months. It's been incredible. We're waiting for this heir apparent to come, where it's going to come from, especially now that some of them are going to start to retire. The carrot's dangling.
What about the Bold Trees, the performance of Manila Knight, Mario Rockstar Briganti? I think that's what Lucky calls him. He joined us in the car yesterday as well, and he couldn't speak highly of his greyhound, especially the week that he had, and it was a difficult week to get him up for the TAB Melbourne Cup. But he found a way. He led all of the way. He got beaten by Blazing Cartier in his heats, and you thought maybe he's had his chance, and if he was going to win the TAB Melbourne Cup, he should have won his heat, but obviously he wasn't at his best in the heat, and that was a big performance, Molly, because a greyhound like Houdini Boy loomed up and looked him in the eye down the back straight.
He sure did. Look, a couple of disappointing things to come out of this Bold Trees is the fact that people are being a little bit harsh on Houdini Boy for this run. I think people forget this was Houdini Boy's second start back over 700. A 700 could knock a dog around a little bit at times, and I just think you can't be upset with his run at all. Sir Truculent is a staying machine from South Australia. And Manila Knight's a track record holder over the 650 at Shepherd. And I think this dog has a huge career in the staying ranks. And, you know, this really surprised me, this victory. Not in a bad way. I knew the dog had talent, but I just didn't know whether he would have won a Group 1 this early, in my opinion. But congratulations to Mario. He did a great job. And you could see the emotion there. He was shocked and relieved. And it was just so good to be on course to witness that in person. It's something that I've really, really missed, not being able to be on track side.
And you make that point that there were some people disappointed Houdini Boy didn't win. But he's got that much. He's popular, isn't he, George, in... And when you have a popular dog like that and everybody talks about it and he gets beat, well, he was a drifting favourite in the end. He started at $3. But that's part of the game. It doesn't matter what sport you like. If you've got a greyhound or a horse that's popular like Chicago Bull, for instance, people were disappointed in him because he went down there on Friday night. But under the circumstances, he went enormous, Chicago Bull. But I guess that's what makes sport so great in a way. The people have their opinions and wear their heart on their sleeves.
It happens over all types of sport, Gareth. I mean, you could be a footy fan or a basketball fan. If you don't bring a championship to your hometown, people unfortunately can you. He looked like he had the second up blues over the 700, whereas Manila Knight had those really good, tough runs over the 650-odd. It was actually in the stewards report too about Manila Knight. Mario went up to the stewards and said, listen, he pulled up a little bit flat from his heat run. It just shows you what a great job Mario did to get that greyhound up and about. And the patience he's shown with this greyhound. He ran 29.32 as a very young dog, I think winning a maiden at Sandown. The world seemed his oyster. Not that he'd form and tape it off, but there were runs there where he was getting to the line well over 500, and now the fact he can run 700, he's got a career set up for him. And I'll tell you what, when you're hot, you're hot. I think the next day at the Meadows, Mario trained a double as well. So when you're going well, you are going well. And congratulations to Mario and owner Phil Smith for their efforts with Manila Knight.
And Molly, we're definitely not jumping off the Houdini boy bandwagon. In fact, boy, he's got a big future, really. When we're having a chat to Cal Greeno about Houdini boy, and he did warn the punters. He said, well, second up syndrome, when they had their first run over the 700 metres at Sandown, they can be a little bit flat next time they go about it. But he will get better as he has a little bit more practice and he is running over those trips a little bit more. So there's no doubt a big Group 1 in him in the staying ranks.
Absolutely. Look, hopefully we see a fair few of these greyhounds competing in the Sale Cup Series not too far away. Look, I think Manila Knight would be perfect for that Sale Cup distance. So fingers crossed we see a couple of these dogs head down Sale Way.
What about the Ballarat Cup heats? What are we expecting there on Saturday night?
Look, there seems to be, every time I talk to someone, they've got something, with a bit of talent that are heading towards these heats. I think they're out first thing tomorrow morning or this afternoon. But there was a greyhound by the name of Pirate Pete, who Jason Thompson trained, who broke Shimmer Shine's track record over the 450, which I know you'd be very disappointed about, Gareth.
Mm-hmm.
But Jason Thompson was very, very quick to say, look, although Pirate Pete broke Shimmer Shine's track record, he is no Shimmer Shine, but a great effort to do so heading into the Ballarat Cup Series. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing what greyhounds do come into these heats, because it's generally a bit of a mix mash of the Melbourne Cup itself, even though we've got a few going everywhere. But in recent years, we've kind of had a fair few of the Melbourne Cup field in the Ballarat Cup heats.
George, your thoughts on the Ballarat Cup?
It's interesting that some of those big guns won't be there. And sorry, Molly, but way too soon to mention Shimmer Shine's record being broken. We just have to be careful with Gareth there. But just back on the Sale Cup quickly, the greyhound I'd really like to see down here, and one from your local town, Molly, is Flake Minnelli. She is a front-running gun who's got the track record over 600 metres at Cannington. I think went within a length of Tornado Tears' 700-metre records. I mean, if there is a greyhound custom-built for the Sale Cup, it's Flake Minnelli, because she gets out and goes, wears blinkers, and nothing else catches her. It would be an unbelievable dimension to add to that Sale Cup. But, looking forward to the Ballarat Cup heats. I believe they come out tomorrow.
And the Gippsland Festival launch not far away. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Molly?
So we actually launched on Sunday through Thrill the Chase, but we do have to wait a little bit longer for our first, I suppose, heats for the Gippsland Festival. So the first leg is the Sale Cup with our final on Boxing Day. That's run over the 650 metres. And, George, I reckon you're on the right track with the Minnelli dog. We might need to get onto Dave Hobby and see if we can put the pressure on for him to come over. But after Sale Cup, we then head to Warrigal, and that's run over the 460-metre distance. And then we round it out with Cranbourne on Saturday the 6th of Feb over the 520. So we've got a bit of a mixture of distances, but it should be a good festival this year.
Yeah, just quickly, guys, we don't like rumours. There's too many rumours in greyhound racing, and most of them never eventuate. But I believe...
Heard a few about you, George.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring them on. I believe that Sunset Spitfire, who's won 11 out of 11 and ran 29.39 at Cannington on Saturday, will be looking to come to Victoria to take on some of our riches. So Dave Hobby hasn't really travelled with many of his greyhounds, but he's got an absolute gun there, of course, the son of Mapunga Blazer. So hopefully we get to see Sunset Spitfire, who's an absolute gun.
If we can get an interview with David Hobby, I'll retire. Very hard man to get hold of.
He is a hard man to catch.
but we will open, we will welcome him into the state, David Hobby. And good news for David. I know he listens to Off the Leash all of the time over there in the West, that you can go home now. December 8th, I think the borders are officially open, so Tommy Shelby doesn't have to quarantine when he heads back to the West. So that might see a few more greyhounds from Western Australia turn up here, George.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've been a really good crop, and none better than Flake Minnelli. I mean, if you just have a look at her 700-metre form, she wins for fun over there. And as we said, once she starts running times comparable to what Tornado Tears was doing when he was at his peak, that's why I thought the Sale Cup. I mean, I'd love to see her down here for that. She would just scamper around that track. And I think Houdini Boy and Manila Knight would prefer that she stayed in the West. But it'll be great to see her down here.
This is a question from... Oh, sorry, Molly, go.
I'm actually just looking at Flake Minnelli and Sunset Spitfire on Fast Track now, and they actually don't currently have a trainer. So it makes me think that maybe they are on their way over here in a bit of a kennel exchange. So I might try my luck and see if I can actually get hold of the elusive Dave Hobby and see if we can find an answer about these guys, because it'll be great to see what they can do over here.
All right, good luck with that, Molly. Now, George, who's the next Shimmer Shine? Hardstyle Rico, Tigger Long Tonk. Simon Told Helen, like coming through the ranks. Can you identify, this is from Jerry, can you identify one for us right now?
Probably Dr. Tucker. I mean, to be fair, I mean, he looked a little bit sore during that period. He's been up for a little while from the Great Chase. If Billy McMahon can get him back, I think with another 6 weeks, he might be a little bit sore. Once he comes back, he'll probably come back fitter and stronger. He's the greyhound that's got that incredible speed and that turn of foot that I think he'd be one that I'd nominate. But there might be one that we haven't even seen start yet that in 3 or 4 months.
Brendan Purcell's, right up there. Brendan Purcell's dog on Friday night.
Eagle's Nest Egg.
Correct.
About, who went 29.09. Yeah, look, the track was pretty fast. But, I mean, in saying that, that greyhound's got the right attributes as well, that's for sure. Probably Jason Thompson's immunity. You'll see her go through the Laurel series, I'd suggest, where she gets back to racing against her own class and sex, and she should be able to handle a couple of those greyhounds. And again, with another 3 or 4 months under her belt, she could be top class.
All right, then, best bets, winners are grinners, and better luck next time, Molly, before we let you go. And also, of course, my favourite, the round of applause.
Yes, we had 20,000 for winners, winners are grinners, 20,000 at $2.50 on Aston Cade at the Meadows. Better luck next time. Unfortunately, someone had 20,000 at $2.30 on Encounter who ran unplaced. And then round of applause, $500 on at 10s on Fletcher J at Shepparton. So a couple of very nice collects, but God, it would have been painful losing 20,000 on at $2.30. But what can you do?
Great stuff, Molly. Well done with your coverage there on Friday night with the 7 team. And good on you, Georgie. You just keep on dominating and being the newsbreaker in greyhound racing.
No worries. Have a good day, guys.
There's George Ferugia, Molly Haynes, and that's Off the Leash.